many ways, the case we'll be looking at today is unfortunately a tale as old as time. A young woman and her daughter vanish into thin air, presumably murdered, the main suspect being the woman's abusive husband, the girl's stepfather. However, what makes this case so strange is that while mother and daughter disappeared from almost the exact same location, they did not disappear at the same time. Instead, mother and daughter both individually disappeared from the same location almost a year apart. Over 30 years out from these two disappearances, this case continues to baffle investigators, and has left the victim's family wondering what could have caused both mother and daughter to disappear a year apart from one another. This is the story of Annette Sagers and Karina Malinowski. While there is not an enormous amount of information about Karina Malinowski and Annette Deanne Sagers prior to their disappearances, their family has provided some information that allows us to construct a picture of their lives before these unfortunate incidents. Through an interview with Karina's brother Leon and his wife Sandy, conducted for the show Up and Vanished, we know that Karina and Leon had a rough childhood. Their mother died very young, and their father was rarely around, leaving the two kids to mostly fend for themselves. Despite this, Karina grew into a kind, fun-loving young woman who loved kids and who always called on holidays and birthdays. In 1978, at 16 years old, Karina became pregnant. For one reason or another, she kept the identity of the child's father secret. After the birth of her daughter, Annette, Karina worked hard to raise the little girl as a single mother, with the help of her brother Leon and Sandy, his wife. Then, in 1981, when Karina was 20 years old, she met Stephen Malinowski, who at the time was 32. Stephen had recently left the army and had been taking up odd jobs ever since, which brought him all around the country. The couple met at a carnival, where Stephen was working as a carny at the time, and the two were married in Texas only 6 months after they met, on October 16, 1981. Shortly after their marriage, Stephen landed a job as a caretaker on the Mount Holly Plantation in Berkeley County, South Carolina, and the family of three moved there in 1982. This historic plantation was located on 6,000 acres of swamps and wetlands, 30 miles away from Charleston. Karina got a job at the Oasis convenience store in nearby Somerville. That same year, Karina and Stephen's first child, a son they named Thomas, was born. Their second son, James, was born 2 years later in 1984. Annette was reportedly a sweet and smart little girl, well-liked by her teachers and classmates, though one of Annette's sixth-grade teachers reportedly claimed that she thought something was off about Annette from the first time that she met her, that she seemed in some way unhappy. Indeed, all was not well within the family. Over time, Karina and Stephen's marriage had grown to be quite rocky, to say the least. Leon claims that Stephen was into drugs, and that the couple fought all of the time, mainly about Stephen's drinking and money issues. It was also pretty well known that Stephen was abusive towards Karina, and Leon often encouraged his sister to leave her husband, telling her that he and his wife would help her out if she decided to get out. Karina, however, chose to stay. On November 21st, 1987, the day of Karina's disappearance, Karina and Stephen had a huge argument, apparently related to Stephen's drinking. According to Stephen, Karina left to go for a drive, leaving the Mount Holly Plantation and driving towards the nearby Highway 52, sometime between 11 and 11:30 p.m. She did not return that night. The next day, November 22nd, 1987, Karina did not show up to work at the Oasis convenience store. This was extremely out of character for Karina, so her boss, Bruce Clarkson, began looking for her, thinking that perhaps her car had broken down. He headed for the most obvious place first, Karina's house, and found her car parked and locked outside the gated entrance to the plantation, but no sign of Karina herself in or around the car. He claimed that there was a layer of dew on the car, which would indicate that the car had been sitting there all night. Later that day, Steven filed a missing persons report and called Karina's brother Leon to inform him of Karina's disappearance. Authorities would search the area around the plantation for any sign of the 26-year-old Karina, but found nothing. No signs of a struggle, foul play, or items belonging to Karina. Nothing. The idea that Karina would willingly up and leave her children seemed unbelievable to those that knew her, but the alternative, that she had been taken against her will, was even more unthinkable. Steven submitted to a polygraph test regarding his wife's disappearance, but the results were inconclusive. With no real leads to go off of, this is where the case of Karina would have begun and ended, had it not been for what happened the following year. On October 4th, 1988, just 11 months after her mother's mysterious disappearance, Annette Deanne Sagers walked to her bus stop on Highway 52 with her dog, as she did every school day. She was wearing red pants, a red shirt, and white shoes. Around 7 a.m., she was seen waiting patiently at the bus stop by the bus driver as he made the stop across the road, on the other side of the train tracks. No other children were picked up at this bus stop, so we can be quite certain that this was Annette. However, when the bus driver finally arrived at Annette's bus stop about 20 minutes later, the 11-year-old girl was gone. While the area did not have a ton of traffic at this time, it also wasn't exactly abandoned, and no one reported seeing Annette get picked up by someone else or walk off. Seemingly, she simply vanished into thin air. Her stepfather, Stephen, did not realize she was missing until around 4 p.m. that day, when she did not show up after school, and he later found out that she had, in fact, never made it to school that day. When Stephen set out to search for Annette, he found a crumpled note written on school binder paper, left in the small wooden hut that Stephen had built to shelter Annette from bad weather at the bus stop. The note read, "Dad, Mom came home. Give the boys lots of kisses and hugs, and also you too. Love, Annette." There were several words crossed out and added in this clearly quite hastily written note. Around 4:15 p.m., Stephen alerted authorities to Annette's disappearance and turned the note into law enforcement. Handwriting experts would later confirm from writing samples provided by Annette's teacher that this note was indeed written by her, although they were unable to determine whether or not the note was written under duress. Oddly, Annette's dog was also missing and was never found. Following Annette's disappearance, the plantation and surrounding area were thoroughly searched, on foot and from the air, but again, just like with her mother, there were no signs of Annette whatsoever. Since their disappearances, no one has seen or heard from either Karina or Annette. Nor have there been any signs of their bodies or any solid clues as to what could have happened to the mother and daughter. An anonymous letter was sent to the local police department in 2000, which claimed that Karina and Annette were buried in Sumter County, South Carolina, along with a detailed map of the location the bodies were supposedly buried in. Police thoroughly searched the area detailed on this map for the bodies, but the search came up empty. The chief of the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office at the time, Chief Randy Harrod, stated in an interview with the Charlotte Observer that, "We had a cadaver dog that could find Civil War-era bones in a jar buried 4 feet in the ground. We didn't find anything." The letter was sent to a lab for analysis, but no fingerprints or any other identifying information were found. Unfortunately, in 1987, crime scene investigation techniques simply weren't what they are today, and combined with the lack of physical evidence in this case, investigators were very limited as to what they could actually accomplish. When asked about the 1987 investigation of this case, Chief Harrod said that it was very frustrating. You have a missing persons report, and that's it until something else comes forward. The sheer lack of evidence in this case unfortunately means that any attempts to determine what happened to Karina and Annette falls mostly into speculation. But, based on the little evidence that we do have, investigators seem to have three broad theories as to what could have happened to Karina and Annette. The first theory and the most unlikely, is that Karina and Annette were both victims of some extremely bad luck, and both happened to be kidnapped and/or murdered by strangers in almost the exact same location. Obviously, while this isn't totally impossible, it is extraordinarily unlikely that a mother and daughter would both be randomly kidnapped off the side of the road from the same spot within a year of each other. Add in Annette's note and the fact that there were no signs of a struggle in either case, and this theory can pretty much be dismissed out of hand. Investigators did explore the possibility of a serial killer operating in the area. There had been other unexplained disappearances around that time, such as the April 3rd, 1987 disappearance of Linda McCord, Sarah Boyd, and Sarah's daughter, Kimberly Boyd, which I covered in a Patreon-exclusive episode a while back. These three went missing while driving home from a gospel concert in Dorchester County, South Carolina, about 20 miles from the Mount Holly Plantation. The Berkeley and Dorchester County areas were rural and heavily wooded, meaning that there were ample places to hide a body, and the somewhat similar nature of these cases raised the possibility of a serial killer being responsible for the disappearances of all five. However, the curious circumstances behind Karina and Annette's disappearances, coming back again to the strangeness of a mother and daughter disappearing from the same location a year apart from one another, has led investigators to believe that these two disappearances, at least, were not the work of any serial killer who may have been operating in the area. The fact that Annette disappeared within a very short window of time, in broad daylight, also leads investigators away from the serial killer theory. A sub-theory here could be that Stephen was involved in one of the two disappearances, likely Karina's, but that the other was the work of a stranger. While technically possible, we have to again acknowledge that the idea of a mother and daughter disappearing from the same location, a year apart from each other, for two entirely unrelated reasons, is difficult to swallow. The much more likely possibility is that, one way or another, these two disappearances were linked. Now, we're going to pause for just a moment to hear a word from today's sponsors. Today's episode is also brought to you by BetterHelp. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is here for you. Connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's incredibly convenient, and you can now get help on your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Unresolved listeners get 10% off of their first month with the discount code UNRESOLVED. If you would like to get started today, head to betterhelp.com/unresolved and fill out the introduction questionnaire to let BetterHelp assess your needs and match you up with a counselor you will love. Once again, you can claim that offer by heading to betterhelp.com/unresolved. That's betterhelp.com/unresolved, and don't forget about the promo code UNRESOLVED. Now, let's return to the show. The second theory in this case is the most hopeful, and it is that Karina ran away from her husband of her own volition, and later came back to retrieve her daughter. If we are to take Annette's note at face value, then Karina did actually run away purposefully on that fateful November night, and later returned for her daughter. This might also explain why Annette's dog wasn't found after their disappearance, as Karina and Annette naturally would have taken the dog with them, and this would also explain why there were no signs of a struggle at the scene of both crimes. However, this theory also raises a lot of questions, some of which can be explained away, and others, not so much. For one, if Karina chose to run away, it doesn't really make sense that she would leave her car behind, as that would be her easiest and most obvious means of escape. One could argue that she left her car behind in the fear that Stephen would be able to track the car down more easily, but that would mean she either ran away on foot, via public transport of some kind, or had an accomplice. All technically possible, but unlikely given that there were no reported sightings, and none of Karina's family or friends have admitted that they assisted her escape over the past 34 years. Then there's the simple fact that Karina and Annette themselves haven't come forward during these last 30 years. Despite the fact that their family and friends, especially Karina's brother and her two sons with Stephen, have been searching for them quite extensively. To this day, no one has heard a word from either of them. Another question this theory raises is why Karina would come back for Annette, but not for her other two children. It's rare enough for a mother to run away and leave her kids behind, but to come back for only one of them seems extremely odd. Many who knew Karina, including her brother and sister-in-law, say that they can't imagine Karina coming back for just one child, and not the rest. This question might have a somewhat logical explanation. Since Annette was Stephen's stepchild, and not his biological child, he did not actually have legal guardianship over Annette, whereas he did with the two boys, his biological sons. Karina's brother Leon and his wife were in fact attempting to convince Stephen to give them custody of Annette following Karina's disappearance, and according to them, they had almost convinced Stephen to send Annette to spend the summer with them, but he canceled at the last minute. Had Annette come to spend the summer with them, Leon and Sandy say that they never would have sent her back to Stephen. Since Stephen did not have legal guardianship, it would be much easier for Karina to get Annette away from Stephen than it would be to get the boys away from him. In addition, the boys were both very young at the time, age 5 and under, and so it was likely rare that they were alone, without Stephen or some other guardian around. Annette, on the other hand, obviously was trusted to at least walk to the bus stop by herself, giving Karina an opportunity to pick up her daughter when she knew Stephen wouldn't be around to see it. Although Karina's family does not seem to think it would be possible for her to have returned only for Annette and not the boys, from Karina's perspective, it may have been a choice between having one child with her or none. While it is certainly possible that Karina ran away and later returned for her daughter, and the only real piece of evidence we have, Annette's note, does seem to point to that. Unfortunately, at this point, it seems very unlikely. Most of Karina's family lived in Iowa, a long ways away from where she and Stephen lived in South Carolina. Supportive family members that live far away would seem to be the logical place to go if one were trying to escape an abusive spouse. And yet, if Karina and Annette are or were still alive, they never got in contact with their family. Remember that, according to Leon and Sandy, Karina called her family members all of the time, and kept them updated about her life. So it seems unusual that she wouldn't at least give them a quick call to let them know that she was okay, and that she had Annette with her. Investigators flagged everything they could possibly flag that might help them locate Karina and Annette, such as school records and social security numbers, and no leads have ever arisen. This leads us to the third and final theory, and perhaps the most obvious conclusion, that Stephen Malinowski had something to do with both disappearances. Unfortunately, this would hardly be the first time that the husband and stepfather was the culprit behind such disappearances, and the abusive nature of the relationship certainly doesn't cast Stephen Malinowski in a good light. Stephen himself doesn't even fully deny that he was abusive towards Karina. In a brief interview on Up and Vanished, a reporter asked Stephen point blank if he ever laid a hand on Karina, and his response was a rather lackluster, "I don't remember. To the best of my memory, I don't think so." Stephen was also the only witness to Karina's whereabouts and movements on the night of her disappearance, meaning that his accounts very easily could have been fabricated, and he, in fact, gave differing reports of that night to the police and Karina's brother, telling law enforcement that he did not see anything after Karina stormed out that night, but telling Leon that he watched Karina drive to the entrance of the plantation, get out of the car, and into another car being driven by someone else. When Leon informed law enforcement of what Stephen had told him, they found this story curious, as not only is the caretaker's cabin about half a mile away from the entrance to the plantation, but the road leading there is very curvy. In other words, the entrance to the plantation can't actually be seen from the caretaker's cabin where Stephen and his family lived. Stephen later denied that he ever told Leon that he had seen Karina get into a car with someone else, claiming that the story he told police was the truth, and the only story he had ever told about that night. This theory posits that Stephen killed Karina, then killed Annette the following year after forcing her to write a phony note stating that her mother had returned. One factor pointing towards this possibility is that Stephen seemed completely unfazed that Annette's note apparently claimed that his wife was still alive out there somewhere. Although he was never arrested due to a lack of evidence, Stephen was certainly the primary person of interest in Karina's disappearance. Sheriff Herod confirms this in an interview with the TV network Oxygen, saying, He was the one we were looking at the hardest. We put him on a state polygraph. We talked with him. He didn't seem very upset, not much emotion. Now, we can never really judge how someone is going to react to the disappearance or murder of a loved one. Sometimes people react in ways that may look suspicious or confusing to outsiders, even if that person is completely innocent. However, it does seem odd that Stephen did not make a bigger deal of this supposed evidence that Karina was alive and well, especially given that many thought he may have been behind her disappearance. In fact, Stephen did not even call Karina's brother Leon to inform him about this note and Annette's disappearance. Some have also noted that it seems unlikely that a sheet of binder paper would sit undisturbed by wind, other people, or animals at a bus stop for the entire day, since Annette disappeared sometime between 7 a.m. and 7:20 a.m., and Stephen did not find the note until after the school day was over, hours later. The theorized motivation behind this version of the story is that Annette knew something about her mother's disappearance, and that Stephen took and likely killed her to keep her quiet. Annette was 10 years old at the time of her mother's disappearance, so unlike her brothers, who were both 4 or under at that time, she was old enough to have noticed that something was amiss, or to have retained memories of something suspicious that she may have seen or heard. If Annette did indeed witness something regarding her mother's disappearance, then she absolutely would have been a liability for Stephen. If we look at the timeline, this could have been why Stephen backed out of letting Annette go and stay with her uncle and aunt that summer, only a couple of months before her disappearance. If he thought that Annette knew something, it would have been dangerous for him to allow her out from under his thumb to stay with other relatives several states away. The idea that Annette may have known something about her mother's disappearance is also backed up by an incident that happened in the time between the mother and daughter's disappearances. 2 weeks after Karina disappeared, her father and stepsister Cheryl traveled to South Carolina to check in on Karina's children. While they were at the house, Annette told her aunt Cheryl she wanted to show her something in the attic and tried to get Cheryl to go upstairs with her. Stephen apparently prevented Cheryl from going upstairs with Annette. Leon and Sandy believe that Annette could have been trying to show Cheryl Karina's body, hidden upstairs in the attic. Sadly, we'll never know if this was the case, but nevertheless, this was a very odd and suspicious incident. Stephen, for his part, claims that he had never even been in the attic of the house and has no idea why Annette would want to go up there. Finally, Stephen's behavior after the crime was quite suspicious. He took his sons and moved to Florida only 3 months after Annette's disappearance. Even though Stephen was the main person of interest in both Karina and Annette's disappearances, there were no actual charges brought against him, so he was free to leave the state if he so chose. However, in most cases of kidnappings or disappearances, the family members of the missing person or persons generally want to stay put, in the hopes that their missing loved ones will make their way back home. So Stephen's decision to move several states away just a year after Karina's disappearance, and a mere 3 months after Annette's, struck many as unusual. Not long after arriving in Florida, Stephen abandoned Thomas and James, leaving them with a neighbor and never returning. The boys were eventually put into the foster care system. Stephen did not inform any of Karina's family members that he intended to give the boys up, despite the fact that Karina's brother Leon and his wife were more than willing to take them in, as they had been trying to take Annette in prior to her disappearance. Surprisingly, this was not the first time that Stephen had abandoned his children. Prior to marrying Karina, Stephen had a daughter with another woman, but left before this daughter was born, and later told relatives that his first wife and child had died in a fire, which of course was not true. Thankfully, both of Stephen and Karina's sons were happily adopted, and turned out quite well despite their rather turbulent early childhood. Today, both are actively searching for their mother and sister, although unfortunately both boys were far too young at the time of the disappearances to have any memory of potentially useful information. In fact, the brothers claim that their original understanding of their family's situation was that their mother had left when they were young, not disappeared mysteriously, but purposefully left. The older brother, Thomas, has vague memories of Annette, but nothing more concrete than a young girl that used to play with them. Eventually, Thomas and James were able to get back in touch with their extended families and learn what had happened to their mother and sister. They've both been looking for answers ever since. Both believe that their father had something to do with the disappearances, and that the only way the truth will come out at this point is if Stephen willingly decides to confess, or if the bodies are found. After abandoning Thomas and James in Florida, Stephen later remarried and had more children. However, as of August 2019, it appears that he is actually in jail in St. Petersburg, Florida, for one charge of domestic-related child abuse, and one charge of tampering with a witness. This arrest was unrelated to Karina and Annette's case. Most who look into this case tend to come to the conclusion that Stephen was at fault for both Karina and Annette's disappearances, and that, unfortunately, he was simply able to cover his tracks well enough to get away with it. The missing mother and daughter's family members seem to have come to the same conclusion, with their relatives all stating publicly that they feel like Stephen was involved. For many years, this case was dead in the water, with no real concrete evidence and no sign of either Karina, Annette, or their bodies. Investigators seemed to think that this simply wasn't a case that they were able to effectively pursue. However, this changed in 2018, over 30 years after both Annette and Karina's disappearances, when two police officers at the Berkeley County Police Department decided to start looking into cold cases in the area. Karina and Annette's case was one of the first that Lieutenant Coquinda and Detective Lewis reopened, and they've logged hundreds of hours investigating the case since they've reopened it. "Just know we haven't forgotten," said Lieutenant Coquinda in an interview with ABC News 4. The duo are treating the case as a murder case. Both feel quite strongly that the mother and daughter never left the 6,000-acre property, saying that in their investigation, they haven't found any information that would lead them to believe Karina and Annette are still alive, as Lieutenant Coquinda said in the same interview. "Because so much time has gone by, and there has been no contact with family, we're treating it as if something has happened." As a result, the bulk of their investigation has been focused on searching the property for Karina and Annette's bodies. As of February 2019, the two officers were working with the College of Charleston to develop a formula that could calculate high probability areas where Karina and Annette's bodies could be located, looking specifically at soil and typography, in order to narrow the 6,000 acres down to 100 or 200. This search would be completed using drones, ground-penetrating radar, and other resources that simply weren't around in the 1980s when these disappearances occurred. DNA testing is also an avenue that detectives are exploring, as DNA technology was, of course, incredibly new at that time, and not nearly at the level that it's at today. During their investigation, Lieutenant Coquinda and Detective Lewis discovered that sometime in the 1990s, a pond on the Mount Holly Plantation property was drained for maintenance, and a rolled-up carpet tied with an electrical cord was pulled out. While the plantation's new caretaker reported this to authorities, it was never investigated as part of Karina and Annette's case, and was never tested for evidence. The detectives believed that this carpet may have been linked to the case, potentially even used as a hiding place for Karina and Annette's bodies, since the pond that this carpet was found in is rather secluded and out of the way, likely a place only the caretaker of the grounds would have access to. Sadly, however, the carpet was disposed of, so we'll never know for sure if it was linked to Karina or Annette's disappearances. Police officials have since had the pond searched by divers, but no other evidence has emerged. For now, that is where the trail runs cold. There unfortunately haven't been any public updates on the case since 2019, although it appears that police are still investigating. We can only hope that one of these days, there will be some breakthrough in the case that will bring answers about what happened to Karina Malinowski and little Annette Sagers. After all, over 30 years later, their family members are still in the dark, left wondering what fate could have befell them. As Leon Sagers said in his interview for Up and Vanished, "I feel like the system just let me down, and let my sister down. I've been hurting all these years. I think about my sister all the time. I'm lost without her." If you have any information about the disappearances of Karina or Annette, please contact the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office at 843-719-4465, or via their website, sheriff.berkeleycountysc.gov. As of this episode's recording, the stories of Annette Sagers and Karina Malinowski remain unresolved.